From Vermont Public, this is The Frequency. I'm Brittany Patterson, filling in for Mitch Wortlieb. It's Monday, April 29th, and here are today's headlines. The capacity of Vermont's motel shelter program for unhoused people could shrink by a third for much of the coming fiscal year, which begins on July 1st. The Vermont Senate passed its version of the state budget last week, capping the number of motel and hotel rooms the state will pay for moving forward. No cap exists for the program now, which currently shelters about 1,500 households. And by definition, everyone currently sheltered through the program meets criteria set by the legislature. That includes families with children, people with disabilities, and older adults. Budget writers say the new measures are intended to rein in costs as the state returns to a pre-pandemic budget reality. But Frank Knack, director of the Housing and Homelessness Alliance of Vermont, said the proposed cap is arbitrary and harmful.
It's problematic that the state, on one hand, is recognizing that, yes, we recognize these people are so vulnerable that we need to ensure emergency shelter for them, and on the other hand, saying, but we're going to create this random room cap that has no basis in reality, no basis in need.
House and Senate leaders still need to hash out their differences over the budget before it heads to Governor Phil Scott's desk. Meanwhile, in the Senate, lawmakers voted almost unanimously Friday to approve a bill that bans neonicotinoid pesticides in Vermont starting in 2029. That's the timeline the Vermont House approved earlier this year. But the Senate Agriculture Committee pushed for the ban to start in 2031. A last-minute amendment preserving the earlier deadline passed narrowly Friday. Senator Ginny Lyons, a Democrat from Chittenden County, introduced the amendment.
We've known for many years about the concerns about these chemicals that we are wonderfully produced to protect ourselves and to allow our food to grow, and we respect the work that's happened in the past, but now we know more.
The Agriculture Committee joined their colleagues in supporting the amended bill. The Senate removed a ban on spraying the pesticides on golf courses and turf, and they added a provision tying Vermont's ban to a parallel one in New York State, so that if New York rolls back a part of its regulations, Vermont would too. The House still has to sign off on the Senate version of the bill before it can go to Governor Scott. And the city of Burlington's budget deficit has ballooned from $9 million to $13 million due to miscalculation of employee benefits and other rising expenses. That's according to a new city budget forecast, which has updated figures for the next fiscal year. VT Digger reports revenue estimates for this fiscal year are also $4 million less than projected with the end of federal pandemic aid. To close the budget gap, city officials are working on an operations assessment study to, quote, identify efficiencies and cost savings. U.S. Representative Becca Ballant visited Bennington on Friday to tour a downtown development project. Ballant was delivering a $1 million federal earmark to reimagine the former Bennington High School, a century-old historic structure that's been vacant since 2004. Ballant acknowledged that chunk of funding will be just one small part of the nearly $40 million project.
You have to have people at the local level who have the commitment to work through all of the difficulty of trying to bring together so many different funding sources. You're not going to be able to find one that is going to be able to foot the bill for all of it.
Developers hope to bring 39 new apartments to the former school building on Main Street, along with the town's senior center and a new child care facility. And lawmakers are taking public testimony this week on a proposed amendment to the state constitution. Proposition 4 would provide equal protection under the law based on race, sex, and other characteristics. Supporters say civil liberties are being scaled back by the U.S. Supreme Court, and the amendment would safeguard against discriminatory practices at the state level. The Vermont House Judiciary Committee is holding the hearing at 5 p.m. Wednesday, in person at the House chamber or via Zoom. Testimony is limited to the first 30 speakers, and you can sign up at the legislature's website. Coming up, the difficulties police face solving decades-old cold cases. That's after this. Last month, Vermont State Police announced a $40,000 reward in one of the state's most high-profile unsolved cases, the suspicious disappearance of Montgomery resident Brianna Maitland 20 years ago. Maitland isn't the only so-called cold case in Vermont. In fact, there are more than 80 unsolved homicides and missing persons cases, some that date back to the 1950s. Vermont Public's Liam Elder Connors has more on how state police tackle the decades-old investigations.
Vermont's unsolved cases come from all corners of the state. Bruce Isaacs, a 29-year-old transient, was found dead at Little River State Park in 1988. Police found 45-year-old Doris Baker dead in 1958 at the berry business she owned with her husband. And in 2001, 28-year-old Dean Webster was fatally shot outside his home in Rochester. Sandy Webster, Dean's younger sister, says her brother was a kind, adventurous person. She says more than 20 years after his death, she still hasn't processed it.
When you know somebody's dying from cancer, you know that they're going to die at some point. And everybody dies, sure. But his was pretty tragic and just all of a sudden.
Dean Webster's killing is one of dozens of unsolved homicides in Vermont. Lieutenant John Paul Schmidt is Southern Commander for the Vermont State Police's Major Crime Unit, which tackles the state's cold cases. Schmidt says these old cases present unique challenges. Witnesses and detectives who worked on them might be dead. Physical evidence can deteriorate. Even just collecting the case files can be tricky.
We found that there's stuff missing over time. There's stuff that was destroyed in Hurricane Irene.
The Major Crime Unit, which was created in 2015, also handles homicides, police shootings, and other complex investigations. And detectives often get called away to handle those new cases, making it difficult to focus on cold cases. That's why in 2018, state police hired two part-time civilian analysts to focus exclusively on the unsolved cases. The team digitizes and organizes case files, develops witness lists, and sees if old evidence can be tested for DNA. Heather Gibbs, one of the analysts, says the goal is to move cases forward, even just a small step.
If we can rule out one more piece of evidence or talk to some person they never talked to before or couldn't find, I mean, they don't sound big, but these are all things that we can do that help it move forward.
DNA testing has helped investigators in cold cases, even if it's just eliminating suspects. Gibbs says a few years ago, state police found the person who matched DNA evidence recovered from the scene of Breonna Maitland's disappearance.
And a suspect wasn't developed, but, you know, it's been since 2004, and we didn't know if that piece of evidence was related or not, or who that person was, or what they might have to say. So now that's a door that we can firmly close, and we don't ever have to look at or wonder about that again.
Police have only solved a couple of cold cases in the past decade. Last year, Burlington police announced they solved the 50-year-old murder of Rita Curran, but the alleged killer died in 1986. And in 2022, the Major Crime Unit made its first arrest in an unsolved case, the 1989 killing of George and Catherine Peacock. The couple was fatally stabbed at their home in Danby. Brad Hansen, the other analyst, says it took a long time to sort through that case file.
Organizing, sifting, going through, doing a complete evidence review, which resulted in identifying some other pieces of evidence to be tested, which bore the fruit we were looking for.
That additional evidence was a spot of blood in the car of Michael Louise, the Peacock's son-in-law. Advances in DNA testing allowed police to match the blood to George Peacock. Louise, who's in his 80s, pleaded not guilty to two charges of second-degree murder. Schmidt, the Southern Commander for the MCU, says not all unsolved cases will end with a conviction or even an arrest.
And that could be circumstances, well, everybody's dead. We can't arrest dead people. We can't prosecute dead people. But we're still trying to get answers for families that are left behind, and those answers might just be a little bit more information than they had yesterday or, you know, years before.
Sandy Webster says it's been years since state police had any significant updates about her brother's killing.
You kind of feel like something's going to happen. They're going to find somebody. They're going to figure something out. And then it's almost like a buildup to be a huge letdown.
Webster says she knows nothing will bring Dean back, but it would be nice to know what happened to him. For Vermont Public, I'm Liam Elder Connors.
Thanks for listening to The Frequency today. We had additional reporting from Carly Berlin, Abigail Giles, and Howard Weiss-Tisman. Our executive producer is Kevin Trevelin, and our music is by Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Brittany Patterson. Talk to you later.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.